This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to Pressing Matters, the show that gets to the story behind the headlines. Today our guest is Mahi Ramakrishnan, a journalist and documentary maker. She's worked for Time magazine and Al Jazeera in the past and now produces for the BBC. In 2015 and the year after, she released two documentaries titled Seeds of Hatred and Bodies for Sale, which explores the issue faced by refugees both in Myanmar and in their new home. This year, Mahi made another documentary. I believe it took 2 years in the making. It also focuses on the Rohingya community. Titled Bo, it looks at the subject of child brides among refugees. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Mahi.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Over the weekend, just to put this conversation in context, the Rohingya were in the global news again. On Friday, Rohingya militants attacked some 30 police stations and clashes continued between the security forces and Rohingya militants into Saturday. This led to thousands fleeing their homes towards the Bangladesh border. Understand that border guards are turning them back or even shooting at them. Mahi, you keep up with the news on the Rohingya community. What do you understand from this latest outbreak?
I think that that the military has actually stepped up their violence against the Rohingya compared to what happened last October. And we have verified accounts saying that the military is actually going door to door, house to house in northern Mongdaw, killing people. And you're right, there are thousands who have already fled to Bangladesh, but they have been stopped at the border. And we are also hearing that the Bangladeshi military is firing at them. So it's utter chaos everywhere.
But what is the reason for this escalation currently?
Well, we are hearing that the militants were the ones who actually, started the violence against the policemen. Now, I do understand that the Burmese military, of course, has a responsibility to protect itself, but I also hope that they can do it without civilian casualties, because now they are targeting civilians and they are violating international human rights laws and other international laws by doing so.
Yeah, I believe the Malaysian government has warned of this happening, that with the persecution of the Rohingya community, in fact, it was breeding ground for militancy, right? This is exactly what was going to happen, and the playbook looks quite clear. I mean, this is not the first time we had Rohingya militants, have we? It's attacking security guards or security forces.
Yes, exactly. You're right. And a lot of people were also, human rights activists and regional NGOs were also predicting this, and they were hoping against hope that this will not happen.
But Mahi, are they using this as an excuse to really carry out this genocide campaign that they've been accused of? Carrying out.
I totally believe so. And I think that this is the last stage of genocide. And if ASEAN does not act now, if ASEAN heads of states remain quiet, then we are going to have a bloodbath. We are going to have another genocide in our backyard. So I think that now the Malaysian Prime Minister, who has already taken a lead championing the cause of the Rohingya, must once again lobby his counterparts and get them to stop Burma from killing, stop the killings which are happening.
Now, can we come to the question of your documentary? Because this is a conversation that can carry on for some time. And I was very struck by this conversation because it really gets at the community and it shows the complexity of the community itself. And one of the things that surprised me was the price that Rohingya men are paying for these child brides. I mean, it's 16,000 in one of those reports that you had, 16,000 Malaysian ringgit for a bride. And that's extraordinary. You think, because it goes against your intuition that these people are poor, they don't have resources, how can they afford 16,000 ringgit for a bride, whether she's a child or not?
Actually, the 16,000 ringgit is paid if she's flown in from Bangladesh. And of course, I think by now that the film was actually censored. But the bit which was censored actually talks about the trafficker explaining about how the passports are forged in Bangladesh and then they're flown in. The child brides are flown in into Kuala Lumpur International Airport, and then bribes are paid to the immigration officers to bring the brides in. And these children fetch 16,000 ringgit. But the other kids, they fetch about 7,000 to 7,500 ringgit. Now, that in itself, it's a huge sum. I do understand, because I too was thinking along the same lines, like, these people are extremely poor, and how on earth are they going to find the money? But then I also found out during the research that they were negotiating payments with the traffickers, that they were not just commissioning the traffickers, but also negotiating payments.
But Mahi, it's mind-boggling for me to think about how easy this seems for people to traffic young people in from say, Bangladesh. I thought that we had moved up the rankings in terms of human trafficking from the United States. I think we are level 2 now or something like
that. A tier 2, yeah.
A tier 2.
That makes me laugh, actually.
Yeah, so why is this so easy?
I mean, I think if I'm not mistaken, in March this year, there were reports coming out of Klang about the atrocious treatment of workers in a bird's nest factory. And a few months later, Malaysia was upped to tier 2. So people were like stumped. The question here is, how did it even happen in the first place? As far as I understand, the sea route from Burma to Malaysia via Thailand, that is closed because of the stringent monitoring. But I also believe that the more you up the enforcement, the more innovative and creative traffickers are getting. And that is why now there's a new route we found out, which is them bringing in brides via through the flights from Bangladesh to Malaysia.
Okay, maybe you could set the scene for us and tell us what your documentary does in terms of explicating this story, and also the parts you say that are censored. I'm assuming they're censored by the Malaysian government.
Yes, I was asked to censor 4 bits by the National Censorship Board before I could actually screen it at the Refugee Festival, which just ended.
So tell us, what is it that your documentary sets out to explain?
Actually, a few years ago, when I was working closely with the Rohingya community, I found lots of kids carrying babies, and I assumed that were their brothers or sisters, and then found out that that were their own children. That got me intrigued, and I started doing a little bit more research. Now, the reason I went into making this film was solely thinking that I'm going to talk about trafficking elements here. Traffickers bringing in children, or children fleeing persecution, traffickers using that and exploiting them. That was what I was looking at, and I thought that was what is going to be found on the ground. But when I did more research, I found out that the Rohingya men were themselves buying these brides by commissioning the traffickers. And that was kind of mind-boggling. So this film talks about the sexual abuse, the violence endured by the children as they are trafficked, held in camps, both in the Thai as well as the Malaysian side, and then sold into marriages to Rohingya men who actually commission or buy brides from them.
But what I can't understand is, why do they have to buy brides? Why couldn't they find brides among the other refugees?
I had the same question, and I really wanted to go into the, you know, get into the heads of these Rohingya men. And I asked them questions like, so there are Rohingya women in Malaysia. Why don't you marry them? It's so much easier than trying to find money and buying brides, which is atrocious. And they said that the girls who are here, they're exposed to a different culture and they will not be obedient. And they wanted wives who will listen to them, who will stay at home, who will not go out on work, who will just be that, wives who stayed at home and were obedient.
Just one quick question. Now, from your from the documentary, it suggests that these young girls are abused, sexually abused, and violated before they even get to the man they're going to be betrothed to. I mean, in traditional societies, I assume that the premium is on virgins, right? And so the idea that the girls they haven't been violated. Why do these men still continue to procure these girls?
That's strange, and I was also questioning about the same thing. But the men tell me that before they marry these girls, they actually ask these girls if the traffickers had done anything to them, and the girls will just typically say no.
Okay, so they believe it.
They believe it, or they choose to believe it, I guess.
Our guest today on Pressing Matters, Mai Ramakrishnan, a journalist and documentary maker, because this year she's come out with her third documentary, Bo, that looks at the subject of trial brides among Rohingya refugees. We'll be back soon with more BFM 89.9. Good morning. Welcome back to Pressing Matters. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Brian Fernandez, and our guest today, Mai Ramakrishnan, a journalist and documentary maker. She, of course, is the director of a new documentary on the subject of child brides among Rohingya refugees, the title of which is Bo. You mentioned that you had 4 cuts in your documentary, and you already suggested one of them had to do with the complicity of Malaysian immigration officials in the ferrying through of a refugee brides child brides at our airports. What are the other 3 cuts that you suffered?
The other one is one of the Rohingya men, the husbands whom I interviewed, talking about bribing policemen every time he turns up for work. And the other two scenes that were completely deleted. So these two interviews, I had to muffle them. So they were muted and the translations, they were blurred out. But the other two scenes which were completely edited out was the opening scene, which had Ganesha, the elephant god, the Hindu elephant god, because the scene starts with a Hindu wedding and a Christian vow. And then you can hear the children talking about how difficult it was for them, the violence and the marriage itself. So the idea was to, from the very beginning itself, convey a sense of, like, to make the viewers feel unsettled. And but the censor said that, you know, it's very confusing because the Rohingya are Muslims, and so I need to edit that bit out. And then there was a narrative, a script which talks about the Malaysia and Malaysia not having ratified the convention. And so we used footage of the Malaysian Prime Minister, and the censor board said that the Prime Minister has got nothing to do with the content of the film itself, even though I tried explaining to them that this is how films are cut, that you cut footage that matches the script. But they said, no, I needed to make sure that the Prime Minister's footage was cut out. And we did that because, you know, I just wanted to make sure that we could actually screen it at the Refugee Festival.
Okay, speaking of refugee festivals, you're the director of this, the Refugee Fest. How did you make that transition between being a documentary director and actually directing a documentary festival?
I know, it's like, you know, I don't understand what I've been doing actually, from a journalist to, you know, an activist and now a festival director. Actually, last year I was talking to my partner and I said that I want to do something for the refugees because they have got great stories to tell and there has to be a platform where these stories could be told. And that is how the Refugee Festival actually started, and I'm trying to make it an annual thing. And this year it was incredible because 80% of the performances were by the refugees themselves. And that way we could give them a platform to voice their aspirations, tell their stories, and I think that that's important.
I'm curious to find out how you finance all these documentaries, these festivals. Do you have a wealthy benefactor, perhaps, that underwrites
a godfather?
This?
No, my dad is well to do, but he doesn't give me a single cent. So the thing is,
Dad,
that
I hope you're listening to this.
Yeah, Bo was filmed with no money. There was an initial sum which was released by a friend. And other than that, we did not manage to secure any funding. So the crew is yet to be paid. The Refugee Festival, it was sponsored, part sponsored by UEM Sunrise and Black Box. But the rest of it, I had to go and get funding from individuals as well as regional NGOs. Because we did fly in artists from Southeast Asia and also Bangladesh. So all that, you know, we needed money to kind of meet all those expenses.
You know, Mahi, you've been in the media in Malaysia for a couple of decades now. And I sometimes wonder why individuals like you can go on and break such major stories and you kind of unearth things. And so much of the mainstream media is not doing that. Or even the alternative media is not doing that either. What is it that allows you to do something like, what enables you to create and reveal these stories?
I think it's the passion and the dedication and the fact that, you know, you don't, however tired you get, you tell yourself that some stories are important, that they need to be told. Now, I'm not saying that you tell a story hoping that it'll change the world. When I first joined Sun, and I think that's when we met, right, Chirag?
Yes,
you know, I thought that
ago,
I was going to change the world. But, you know, after like 2 years, I told myself this is not going to happen. But I also told myself that it is really important that stories are told the way I see it on the ground. And the minute there are important stories, however difficult it is to tell the story, however dangerous it is, I will go ahead and do it. I think it's really about pushing the boundaries. It's about following your heart, following your passion.
And I think you've missed one key attribute, which is courage. Courage really to tell the story. Courage to, in fact, put yourself in danger. And can you share some of the instances where you felt really threatened or scared when making this documentary?
This documentary, I did not feel threatened because I had an incredible fixer and I've already worked with the community for 11 years. So, and I've not just worked as a journalist or a filmmaker, but I've also brought aid in. I've made sure that people had access to hospitals and medicine and schools as well. So they kind of trust me. And that way it was a safe environment. But what was difficult were the interviews themselves, listening to children talk about the sexual violence that they had gone through. That was incredibly difficult. I have a daughter, and that makes it even more difficult, especially this girl who became a sex slave and was raped by close to 60 traffickers, if not more, by the time she was 12. And by the time she was 12 and a half, she had already had a miscarriage. But I see courage in people like that, you know, in kids like this who actually can sit in front of me and tell me that story in the hope that, you know, that will change something for the future.
Have you shown this documentary to the community? And what, if so, what has been their response?
I have shown it to the community because I made sure that more than 50% of the audience that turned up to watch it, the premiere screening at the Refugee Festival, were the Rohingya themselves. And I was thinking that they were going to get really angry with me. But to my surprise, a lot of them said that that story had to be told. And yes, it is true that the Rohingya community is extremely patriarchal with a feudal mindset, and that has to change, that women's roles in the society, in the community, simply has to change. And they think that that is a good documentary and a good documentary that has to be told, and that is the time to do it.
Do you think that the impact, will there be a significant impact on the powers that be by making documentaries like this?
See, I've been frustrated making documentaries because I've done films on trafficking of children, trafficking of migrant workers. I've broken a story on the child sex industry in Malaysia. But nothing changes significantly. People watch the film and say, oh my God, we really need to do something. This is atrocious. But then it stops there. So it's quite frustrating for a filmmaker like myself. But now what I'm doing is I'm working with certain people like Angel Fernandez so that Tanaganita, so that this new piece of information about the trafficking route can be put and shared with the Anti-Trafficking Council. I'm also working with YB Charles Santiago, APHR chairperson, in his capacity as the chair for APHR, to put the agenda of trafficking as well as child rights on a regional level as well.
I know you have tremendous sympathy for the community, but when you see images of the community, and especially in this case, the men behaving in either extraordinarily patriarchal fashion, or even treating their children as chattel, as like slaves, do you think it would have the effect of turning people off and saying, well, okay, if they're such brutes, if they're such animals, and then we don't want to help the refugee community out? Do you ever worry that that putting out these negative images of the community might actually rebound onto the community in that fashion?
I did worry about it, but I was thinking it through and I told myself that these are two different issues here. One is the treatment of the Rohingya men against their women and children, and one, the persecution, the violence that they continue to suffer. And the persecution and violence is real, just like what we are seeing over the last few days, the photos and the videos that's coming out of Arakan. So I would really like people to understand that, yes, there is a need for change in the Rohingya community. There's a need for change in the mindset of the Rohingya men. But that does not disregard the fact that they are one of the world's most persecuted people, and the violence is ongoing against them.
Yeah, I believe the UN has actually declared them such, right?
Yes.
Now, the question is, where next? You're going to continue with your work with the Refugee Fest. You're going to perhaps make a new documentary. Are you planning a new documentary?
I actually haven't thought about a new documentary because this documentary has affected me to a point that I feel that if I'm not able to affect changes on the ground, then it's going to be incredibly difficult for me to start work on another documentary.
So now change of strategy for you then, to engage differently so that you could make a difference.
Exactly, to engage all the stakeholders, to connect the dots, not just with people in the region, but you know, across the globe, so that everyone can come together and look at this issue.
Okay, Mahi, last question for you. What can we do to help?
Help as in?
Help the community. How can we help the community? How can we push this conversation forward? How can we change things on the ground?
I think it's really about civil society and non-governmental organizations coming together under the umbrella of the UNHCR to actually educate community leaders so that they can go and educate the fathers, the brothers, the husbands, and tell them that child brides just cannot continue, that you cannot be marrying children off anymore, that the children need to play a bigger role, that you need to look at keeping them longer in schools, and you need to look at empowering them, giving them skills. The only way to do it is to actually have an umbrella body working together with NGOs and CSOs, and I think that the UNHCR is in the best position to do it, and I think that they should.
That was Mahi Ramakrishna, journalist and documentary maker. Her latest documentary, Bo, the subject of which is child brides among the Rohingya refugee community. She's also the director of Seeds of Hatred, as well as Bodies for Sale. Thank you so much, Mahi, for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
We're coming up to the news, and then, of course, we'll have Enterprise Takeover. I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Brian Fernandez. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.